And I sat with her and she said something to me that like clicked and I signed up right away, which was, you know, therapy is meant for you to deal with your past or deal with things that come up as a result of your traumas and things like that. Mm-hmm. Coaching is meant for you to move forward. Like, what are the actionable steps to move forward?
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike Dizio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike Dizio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest today is a dedicated community activist, passionate mental health advocate, and a second generation immigrant on a transformative journey to make a difference in her life and the lives of others. Through coaching and mindset training, she has gained a better understanding of herself and the limiting beliefs that she was challenged with. Today, we'll touch on some of these challenges, such as imposter syndrome, perfectionism, and people-pleasing. She's now found strategies to feel more confident in challenging those limiting beliefs and now runs a nonprofit collective and has created a successful business of her own. Podcast listeners and viewers, I'd like to welcome Mirette. Hello, Mirette. How are you doing today?
Hi, thank you for having me.
So just to start off, I was wondering if you could just spend a few moments letting our audience know who you are, what you do, and maybe a bit of your backstory.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, thank you for those kind words, by the way. It's always nice to hear from somebody else. But yeah, my name is Mehret. I was born in Ethiopia. I immigrated here in 91. So I've been here a very long time. Me and my family came here by the way of Sudan, and then we went to Saskatchewan. So essentially, my introduction into Canada was coming from a completely African, everything was very familiar, to something completely different, which was at that time Saskatchewan. And my family, being one of the only Black people there, had to learn the ways of the West really quickly. I picked up English. I had no English coming here. My parents were trying to figure out how to make it here financially. And then I ended up going to school. Eventually, we moved out of Saskatchewan and headed to Windsor. And then in Windsor, I went to school, eventually finished a university. And yeah, I just lived within the community, the Habesha community, but also started to learn a lot more about the Western way of life. And that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, that must have been really scary because a lot of people grow up in the place they're born and stay there their whole lives and don't experience a brand new culture. And it must have been kind of shocking in the beginning. How long did it take to sort of feel comfortable and, hey, this is home?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? The concept of what feels comfortable and what feels like home.
Yeah.
Because in many ways, I think I'm still trying to be fully comfortable in like figuring out where my home is. Is it in Toronto? Is it back in Windsor? Is it in Ethiopia again? But I think I have learned to be comfortable in both spaces. And that's just as of recently through some of the things we're going to touch on today with the awareness and just the understanding of what comfort feels like and that being an internal thing and home being an internal thing. So that's a long answer, but I think I'm getting there. I'm finally feeling more comfortable,
sure.
Feeling more like I'm at home wherever I am.
Right, right. And we'll touch on it later, but obviously you do a lot with your community within Canada. So people who are also coming here, they have the benefit of knowing you, that you've been here for quite a while now. So you can sort of help them integrate and feel more comfortable as they grow. Okay, great. So in the beginning, we mentioned that you have your own business, but when you started it, you were kind of surprised at how many insecurities came up for you, such as imposter syndrome, perfectionism, people pleasing. Were these areas that you always had struggles with, or did the process of starting your own business kind of really highlight these areas and issues for you?
It's probably something that subconsciously I've always been challenged with, but it was very recent that I had words to what these challenges were. So when I decided to take on coaching or try coaching, that's the first time I actually was able to put a name to some of the challenges. And it was because I was trying to do something that was so outside of my comfort zone. Being, you know, I never had anyone in my family that was in business or ran a business or even knew what a business was. When I remember when I first started, and I was like, oh, I'm thinking of opening this business. People were like, oh yeah, that's easy. Just put a website together, get a logo. What is a website? What is a logo? These things that come very easily to other people. I was finding myself now having to figure out what kind of website that I'm going to do, or what is a type of logo, and why do designs matter, and like doing that type of research. So that was coming up as a result of me wanting to get out of my comfort zone and do something that's completely different for me altogether.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, I would think, I know when some people, when they get a new job or they're just doing something, like you said, out of your comfort zone, the perfectionism can come into play, and you want to do a good job and you want to make sure you're not messing up. But I guess there becomes a point where if you're overly concerned with that, it sort of stunts your forward growth. And I don't know about you, but if I'm more worried about screwing up than producing amazing work, I can waste a lot of time, and doing something that should only take an hour might take 3 hours just because you're really worried about the fallback or the fallout. So between perfectionism, people pleasing, and imposter syndrome, was there one of those three that was really the biggest struggle, or was it sort of equally those three things?
I mean, if I had to choose one, I would say, because they all kind of interplay.
For sure.
And all of them result into something not being done, right? Whether I'm masking it with, because I feel something, I'm not able to do this, through imposter syndrome or perfectionism, because I've made my mind believe that until it reaches X, I'm not going to execute. Or people pleasing, waiting for somebody else to validate that this idea is good and then go ahead and execute on it. I think all of them interplay, but I think once I had a better understanding of what it was, what these things were that I was having challenges with, and also the timing that I was in. I think that is not talked about enough. I think the timing, I was really desperate to have a significant amount of change in my life at that time. So I was almost like, it's now or never. I've always wanted to open up a business. So I think once I have a better understanding of it, timing, and then getting over the fact that everybody's just making it up as well. I started to kind of, I really, like, that was an affirmation for me for a long time, which is like, that person's making it up. I don't really believe that they know exactly what they're doing. Or at the very least, when they started, they didn't know exactly what they were doing. And I really started to believe that. So executing on things that came to me or became a little bit easier, a little bit, because I was still waiting for it to be perfect, but now I had a deadline for that perfection, right? So I started to put in strategies around me where I'm like, okay, maybe sometimes it automatically goes without even me having to check it, because I had to remind myself of that. Put a timer. And so if that social media post, you want it out, don't trust yourself because you know you'll be like, oh no, the colors aren't perfect. So yeah. I started doing things like that, and it got the ball rolling.
I love that. One last thing I want to touch on with something you mentioned, and I think maybe our viewers, listeners might feel the same way. I also came from a family where no one was an entrepreneur. No one had their own business or whatnot. So the messaging was kind of like, even if I had ideas or wanted to do that, the messaging was kind of like, no, you can't really do that. That's not our domain. No one in our family's ever done that before. We're not an entrepreneurial family. So you're not only going up against your own insecurities, you sort of don't have the family encouragement and backing to go forward and do that. So I think it'd be really tough to move forward if you don't have sort of that family support. And then you could easily tell yourself, hey, maybe they're right. Maybe I come from a family of laborers and academics. Maybe being a teacher or being a construction worker is kind of my place in life. But as you did, you kind of bypassed that, and we'll touch on some things later, but you're like, no, I'm doing this. This is something I really want to do. And it doesn't matter sort of what my programming is or was. So you mentioned that you got a coach to help you along in the process. How did you find this person, and what value did they add, not only to your business and growing your business, but to your life overall?
when I found my coach, it was someone that was in my peripheral, meaning that they were within the community that I follow on social media. And I watched that person passively. But when the time that I was like, something needs to change in my life, she came to mind. And I don't know, because I think my programming was, I was watching her passively, but I was very, my system was intrigued by how she was living her life. And so I reached out to her and shared that I've done traditional therapy. I'm interested to find out what coaching is. And that was just because I was also a pessimist, if I'm being honest. There's a new fad every week. So I'm like, okay, they told me therapy was going to change me. They now are telling me this new thing, coaching is going to change me. I just want to hear what this one offers. And I sat with her and she said something to me that clicked and I signed up right away, which was therapy's meant for you to deal with your past or deal with things that come up as a result of your traumas and things like that. Coaching is meant for you to move forward. What are these actionable steps to move forward? Right. And just from that conversation alone, not to mention that she was someone from a part of my community who looked like me, who was also a woman struggling with the same things that I potentially might have struggled with, it gave me a sense of safety. Okay, this person, for whatever reason, I'm feeling drawn to her. And so I ended up purchasing her program right away. And it's honestly, I tell her, we're still in communication now. And she even says, I can see the difference in you. And she's in many ways has been one of the most key pieces in where the journey I'm in now. And she's played such a huge role. And it's a lot also because of who I see she is, the actionable steps that she's taking in her life, right? Because it's easy for us to be like, oh, here's what I'm doing, subscribe and purchase this. But when I see her, she's active in her business. She's doing similar things that I want to do in terms of these preconceived notions about my culture or my community or what women should be or men should be. Like, she's living a life that I want to introduce some of that in my own. Her being completely inspired me in that way. So it's, yeah, it's just all around has added a lot of value, not to just me creating this business, but just to who I am overall.
I love that. She sounds like a really special person. It's really cool to have somebody to see that you want to emulate and be like, okay, this is the type of person that I want to be like. And you said that she does a lot of the things she talks about. So we were talking, I think, about this before the podcast, but some people talk the talk and don't always walk the walk. It's kind of like, do as I say, but not as I do. But obviously something resonated with you and you felt this person was really authentic. And that's so amazing how you just were like, I'm going to call and just see how I feel. You know what I mean? What's the harm in just calling, having a conversation and seeing if you feel that spark or genuineness from the other person? So obviously you got that right away. And it sounds like it was one of the best decisions you ever made for yourself.
Yeah. And she actually brings this up in her coaching course. And she talks about this thing called expanders, which are people that are within your community, within your, I guess, orbit that you strive to be like. So just having someone who it may be one thing about a potential, whether it's a coach or a human being, having someone that you can kind of emulate.
Yeah.
Because everybody, I know it's easier to say it, we created everything by ourselves or we created things, but we all come from somewhere. So once you see somebody that's a little bit further ahead, it gives you something to kind of push towards and aspire through. So she talks about it, expanders, and she's an expander for me, right? And then she has her own expanders where she looks up to other, whether people or coaches.
Right. That's so true and so important that we do. I probably fall into that trap too, where I think, oh, I did this all myself, being of more of the avoidance side of things. I'm can be really independent and think, oh, I'm doing this all on my own. But if we don't have those people who have done things before us, we kind of wouldn't have that sort of confidence or hope that that can be done. And just the obvious example was the 4-minute mile was deemed to be impossible to be done. And people were trying to run the 4-minute mile for years and years and years. And people would come close, but could never break it. As soon as the first person ran the 4-minute mile that year, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people started doing it. Now the 4-minute mile is a standard thing. Same with Mount Everest. Before it was deemed that it's too deadly, no one can ever climb Mount Everest. Once the first expedition did it successfully, now you have, look at today, we have all these people climbing Mount Everest all the time. So yeah, I love what you said about expanders and having people to want to emulate and be like, because it gives you inspiration. And that's why we had you on today. I was hoping people would be inspired about you and your story. So thanks for sharing. So for anyone thinking of starting a business, what advice would you give them, or a nugget of wisdom to avoid some of maybe the challenging parts in the beginning for you? And would you recommend that everybody get a coach, or is that not necessary for everybody?
I would say when you're starting a business or maybe anything new, and this might sound silly to some, but just start it. I think that sometimes we waste time with the thought, all these other things, like I was mentioning earlier. For me, being a perfectionist, wanting to have all the research, all the data. Oh, I got to make sure I check in with so-and-so and they know what they're doing, so they're going to give me this. So it's always constantly waiting on someone. So I say just start, whether it's starting by having an initial conversation, even with, if you're doing bags, the manufacturer of the bags that you want to get, calling them and just getting an actual person on the phone and having a conversation with them, because you have started your business. Using language that means that it's an active movement. So I would simply just say, just start it and start to see what comes up for you. That's how I learned. That's how I've learned to manage my whole social media. I'm some social media page. Like, I was someone that didn't even have Instagram starting. I was still on Facebook. Okay. Like, so I would just say, yeah, I would say just start it.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you touched on it before too, I think is important as well when you're doing your own business. You said, did you automate some things? Because sometimes a Facebook post that you might want to go out, you might analyze it like, is this look good enough? Is the font good enough? Whatnot. Would you say to sort of build in some things that you're doing daily, or maybe automating, just so you know what, it's happening, it's getting out there, and we can refine it as we go along, but don't wait for things to be perfect before you do your daily tasks?
Exactly that. Yeah. Exactly that. Don't. For me, how perfectionism shows up is I almost anticipate the mistake. I anticipate So I almost have to challenge my core beliefs of that and let it go out and see what happens. And then once I see that, people are engaging with this post, people are following up, people are buying, it's going against my own way of thinking. So that I'm like, I actually might know what I'm talking about. I might be doing a good job. And the more of that happens, then you're soaring.
The momentum. Yeah, I love it. And I'm sure everyone who's doing anything and putting themselves out there, I'm sure even Tice can speak to this. The videos she made in the first 6 months to a year compared to the videos that she's putting out now, I'm sure she's kind of looks at the initial videos like, oh my gosh, these aren't the best. But it's part of the process. You're not going to be like this amazing, perfect presenter, speaker, whatever, until you put in those hours and that repetition. So it's almost, expect in the beginning. Yeah, you're not going to be maybe the best of all time and look perfect, but that's how you get there, putting in the hours. Nobody just starts out being amazing at being an influencer or whatever product they're trying to put out. Thanks for sharing that, Marette.
I just wanted to pop in here and let you know we are doing a 7-day free trial to the All Access Membership Pass at PDS, which means you get access to literally everything inside of the school. And this includes the 4 live webinars I do with our students every single week. And on top of that, you get access to all of our different courses. We have over 55 different courses on relationships, communication, boundaries, emotional mastery, guilt and shame, learning your needs, so many different facets that are really important to master our lives and feel really good about our lives going forward. And last but not least, there's a daily community event. We have trained facilitators and coaches who are in there doing that work, showing up to support you on your journey every single day. Please join me on the other side. Come check it out. See if it's a fit for you. I'd love to see you there. Go ahead and sign up by clicking the link in the description box below.
So you help run an organization called Art and Health, and that's a mental health collective that promotes mental wellness to culturally specific communities in Toronto. Can you talk more about your organization and why something like this is so important for the Ethiopian and Eritrean community of Toronto?
So Art and Health is a nonprofit collective where we use storytelling and art to combat the stigmas around mental health in our community. And it really started from the co-founder, who had her own experiences of mental health. And then I came on a little later on because I was also doing community work, community activism in my community because of some of the experiences that I had with my own family. So when I was younger, my sister was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And during those times, there was no words. We didn't know what was going on with her. We just knew that she unfortunately was becoming destructive both to herself and then to the family. And our community had a reaction to that and wasn't so positive because they didn't understand what was happening and we didn't understand what was happening. There was just a lot of isolation. There became a bit of judgment in my community. And I remember at that young age just feeling hurt and just hurt because I felt like I didn't do anything wrong. Why are you guys treating us this way? But as I got older, it became such a passion of mine to make sure that people that were struggling and communities, my community specifically, started to understand what mental health was and how people living with mental health are still people and are still human beings and things like that. And I also noticed, because at some point I was working in the criminal justice system, and when I was younger, I used to think, oh, it was only my family that had someone that struggled with mental health issues. But as I worked in the criminal justice system, I started to see a lot of Habesha, which is Ethiopian Eritrean kids, that were deeply unwell due to their mental health. But this was never something that their families had ever talked about. And so I wanted to be part of a space that welcomed you for who you are and also educate those that were willing to learn about mental health and how that shows up. And that's kind of in short what Art and Health is. We use traditional practices to talk about uncomfortable conversations around mental health and things like that so that our community does a better job than maybe when I was younger in dealing with folks that have families or themselves are experiencing mental health issues.
Wow, that's amazing that you're doing that for people. And even just in the story that you shared, if you see that's the reaction from people, everybody saying negative things and making you feel and your family feel like you guys are messed up or this is terrible, obviously, who's going to want to share with others what's going on for them? They'll see how your family was treated and maybe even participate in it. And if the culture is, we can't talk about this, then yeah, it'd be so scary. You're just suffering on your own. And I know when I was younger, I struggled through a lot of mental health stuff, but because we kind of live in a society sometimes where you're not supposed to show that, and you can easily be fooled and think everybody seems to be doing well and I'm the only one who's struggling, what's wrong with me kind of thing, and then feeling shame and guilt, and you end up just wanting to hide. You don't want to tell people or talk about it, but it's so beautiful how you're providing a space where people can share what's going on for them. No one's going to judge them. And then it shows everybody else, hey, like, come as you are, share what you're going through, and let's support each other and let's treat each other like humans. Exactly. So that's really wonderful what you're doing. And your community is really lucky to have you. So I want to touch on it's the art component. Why is art such a powerful and effective healing tool with your organization?
Yeah, so we use art, one, because of the co-founder who's an artist herself, but it was a medium that we wanted to introduce in our community because you have such a non-judgmental outlet. So we wanted to introduce them to different forms of healing because we understand that they're not one size fits all. Some people could go through therapy and have positive outcome there. But because of where our community was, the idea of therapy, the idea of going into institutions, that just does not feel safe for them. So we started to introduce art in the way that how we may have healed in the past. So music is a big thing in the Habesha community. Dancing is a big thing. Food is a big thing. And it's all based on expressing something, right? When you're dancing, you're almost letting out the happiness that you're feeling. So canvases through art, in a way, are a way of expressing yourself without any other reason than to just create. And just imagine that. All you're going to be doing is creating something based on the colors that feel good for you, the textures that feel good for you. Everything is completely based on what you feel. And that's what we try to focus on during the session. And I'm going to share a little story about my experience with art therapy and one of the first times that I did it. So this is being introduced to me as a form of healing. So I'm like, of course, I've done all this work. I've gone through this and that. What's art therapy? Let's do it. And I remember the art instructor gave me the canvas, and immediately my perfectionism comes out because I'm like, I need to get on my phone. I need to learn how to make the perfect picture, the perfect colors. What does this mean? But the more I practiced art or practiced doing this one thing, I started to have a sense of ease about it. I started to just let my body tell me how to go on the canvas and how to draw on the canvas. And this is a lot of what we see with even the young people that come and do art with us, is they tell us the stories about what they're creating on this canvas. Because oftentimes we'll open the space if people want to share what came up for them and what they ended up drawing. And these experiences that are so deep, but it's through a picture that they're really able to let it fully out. And this has been, it's been transformational in many ways. And we will continue to do art and introducing different modalities of healing within the context of what we're creating at Art and Health.
So would you say then, through the art, some people might not have the language to like share what they're going through. So does the art sort of act as a conduit to express what you're going through that you might not otherwise be able to speak in normal everyday language?
Yes, absolutely. That's a great point. A lot of our clients, they'll be newcomers, so new to the country, don't speak the language. And yeah, so that it becomes a vessel, right? But the art itself becomes a vessel of expressing what they're feeling inside.
Wonderful. Okay, so you mentioned food as being one of the big integral parts of the collective and the get-togethers. What is it with food that sort of aids in the healing and the community aspect?
Yeah, absolutely. So at every single session that we have with Art and Health, we always have Ethiopian Eritrean food, which traditionally in our homes, everything happens around food, good, bad. If there's a death, you have food. If there's celebration, you have food. So we make sure that food is present, and one that's Ethiopian Eritrean, just to kind of remind us of kind of the warmness and the feeling of home almost through the food. And we do it also because we understand that mental health or wellness in itself is, if you're not full, then it's very hard to then start talking about your traumas or, you know, things that are coming up for you. So we just want to make sure folks are fed. Their traditional familiarities are also being shown. So the traditional aspects like food and coffee are always present. The music that we play is always present. We just try to always be intentional in like the cultural safety that we're creating, so that people can have their barriers down as they attend the session, while we open them up as well when we start talking about these uncomfortable conversations.
Wow, that's really wonderful. Sounds powerful. So I want to touch back on your own personal growth journey. I was wondering, what are some of your favorite tools that you've encountered, or practices or modalities? What sort of helped you the most, and what keeps you sort of in a good space mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually? What would you say sort of have helped you the most?
Yeah, I mean, I have a toolkit. I think one of the things that I have the privilege of doing is that I've been able to try a lot of different things, right? And I suggest that for everyone. I suggest you have so many tools in your toolkit that if one isn't feeling right in that season, you can pull out another one. So for me, the things that are standing out in this season in my life right now, it's always been mindfulness is huge, and having some type of movement in my day, whether it's through yoga, I'm going for a walk outside. I mean, a lot of it is being outside. A lot of it is being in nature. A lot of it looks like touching grass. I need to be grounded, because a lot of myself and some of the challenges that I have is my mind is always working. My mind is on overdrive. Since I have this awareness, I'm always trying to find different tools to kind of ground me back to the present moment. I also use affirmations daily. I find them incredibly helpful. And in the affirmations that I tend to go to are always sacred to me. I almost use it as prayer or spirituality, and yeah, and just connections. I mean, I've now challenged myself to also be in spaces that don't always feel comfortable going into that yoga class that is not in my neighborhood, for example, or trying out kickboxing. Just always challenging my mind to kind of do more has been, powerful in me becoming who I want to be in this world.
Oh, I love that. I love all that. But the part that resonates with me the most is challenging yourself and putting yourself in uncomfortable positions. I used to be afraid of my own shadow, so I would avoid anything uncomfortable. And as soon as the uncomfortableness came up, I'm like, I'm out. But now it's interesting that we seek it now because it's so important for your growth. You show yourself what you're capable of and you feel amazing after. And then you just leveled up where, hey, I can do this activity or do this thing. And that applies to so many areas of life. I'm not saying you need to jump into a plane and skydive or do something extreme, which I did hear. Somebody mentioned to cure her fear of heights, she did skydiving and she's like, it cured it completely. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty extreme, but whatever works. I love this idea of sort of challenging your comfort zone, because just because you're a little uncomfortable, you feel a bit of fear coming up. That's actually symbolizing, hey, this is growth. As long as there's no immediate danger or threat to your survival in the environment, that's probably something, if you get to the other side of, you're going to feel really good about overcoming and stretching yourself. So I love that you do those things, and that's very helpful advice. Thank you. So we're getting towards the end of our interview. I just want to ask you a few more questions. So after doing the healing work on yourself, what areas have you seen the biggest change? And what are some of the areas that you say that you've improved on the most?
I think the biggest changes that I've seen the most has to be around actually relationships. And not just romantically, I mean, with my family, with people that I value and want to keep in my life. I think part of this work has helped me kind of expose in a way who I am, who good and bad, and understand that like some people will accept you for that and some people will not. And I know it sounds kind of interesting that through opening a business or trying something uncomfortable, your relationships start to get better. But that's really the beauty of trying to grow and better yourself in that way, is that if you see a problem in the way that I was showing up for business, there's a familiarity in how I was showing up in my relationships, romantic or not, which was I was inauthentic. There's just so many things that were showing up. So I think relationships is a big place that I've kind of been able to heal and start to bond, create bonds there. And then I would also say when it comes to my businesses and just what I'm willing to strive for, a lot of the work that I'm really passionate about doing now is really oriented in action. It's really trying to bring folks who have, and I would say the majority of us have had challenging situations, but going from the victim mentality into the hero mindset, and how you do that with baby steps. It's not a leap. It's in the way you wake up in the morning. It's in the way you do something, even when your mind is completely telling you, no, go to sleep. You don't have to get up. Nobody's watching you. And you still do it. And in trusting that your life will look better and feel better as a result of that.
I love that. And I think a lot of people they think they can hit a home run and kind of explode into what they want to become or what they want to be. But if you talk to any successful person or anyone who's got to a level where you're like, really, wow, they've done amazing for themselves, we'll see them on Instagram or other social medias and be, wow, I want that life. Yeah, they show you the fruits of their labor, but they don't show you the years and the disappointments and the daily things that they did to bring themselves there. Unless you're a lottery winner, it's no accident that these people are very successful in their business. And it was through a lot of trial, error, making mistakes, but showing up every day and just taking those baby steps, as you said. And that's what sort of adds up to a beautiful work of art. It's not just a one-time big shot. We need that consistent growth and effort.
I just wanted to touch on that because this is something you and I had talked about briefly, which was also the idea of success, right? And what people look at. I think social media will sometimes make us believe that everybody's ideas of success is all the same. Financial gain, picket white fence, these are the things that will make you happy, right? Or successful. I think part of doing this work, really, that if that's your aspiration, will come. But it's how you feel day to day that becomes the real success. Or if that's something that you're looking for, your success has to be very determined to what your personal values and core values are and what you see as successful. And is also, for me, essential and the first place to start is, one, who are you? And two, what do you, as the person that you are, who you can imagine, what does that look like for you? And silence kind of the noise that's behind you to create that successful place in your life.
I love that. Great advice. Before we leave, can you share a tool or a habit or a strategy with our audience that might help them in their everyday life?
Yes, I'm going to say this one because I didn't really think about this one earlier, but I would say do something that doesn't make you money. Just do something that has no financial gain to it and start there and start to build on that and start to foster that and see how that feels. And then maybe think about other places that are in your life that you want to feel that same feeling that you do when you are not doing something for a financial gain, and then add that to create kind of, yeah, to start creating the life that you want or makes you happy.
I love that. There's so much we put pressure on. If it's not making money, it's what's the point, or what's the value in it? Why would we put our energy into that? But it does bring you a lot if you're doing something just for the sake of it, if you enjoy it or you think it'll bring other people benefit. I love that advice. That's really, really helpful. So what's next for Mirette? Where are you putting your focus these days? Is there anything coming up on the horizon that you're working towards? What's going on for you now and in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I'm constantly someone that is in a growth mindset. So right now that where I'm at is I'm starting to slowly start picking up on coaching clients. So kind of the goal for the next year is I'm currently seeing clients, but I want to do 2 or 3 more. I try to limit the amount that I take just because it takes a lot out of people that are on the other side of it as well. And that's something that I've also learn to manage and feel for myself. So I'm currently picking up coaching clients. I'm starting with just the idea of changing your narratives and changing just the idea of what you feel about yourself. And I mean, as someone who's come into this world thinking I need to be one way, and now being in a place where I'm starting to create what that looks like, which is authentic to me, I want to help folks if they're also looking to make that some changes and create a different narrative in their life. So, and I'm always going to be involved in art and health. That's something that's deep in me. So we'll continue to grow there.
That's amazing. Very exciting. And I'm sure the people that work with you get a lot of benefit from your wisdom and your experience and knowledge. So lastly, how can people get in touch with you?
So social media is Art and Health. So you can follow Art and Health. And if anybody needs to contact me directly, it's my first name, MIHRAT at artandhealth.ca.
Okay. And you want to leave any social media handles to your business, anything?
Oh yeah. And then Shop Ayelet, which is my business. I'm sorry. Yeah. Shop Ayelet. So shop and then Ayele. And that's all on social media.
I kept saying your business, but I don't think we actually said what your business was. Do you want to just quickly say, let our audience know what you do?
So I sell handmade products that come from Africa. The idea is that African bags and African designs should be seen globally. And that's what we aspire to do. So it's up and coming, but we've started, and yeah, you can check us out at Shop Ayala on Instagram.
Wonderful. That's so cool. Well, Mirette, I know you're a busy bee, so I really appreciate you taking the time today. I enjoyed our conversation. I hope you did too. And maybe we'll catch up with you in the future and see how you're doing. But thanks again for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. This was wonderful.
Okay. Thanks everyone who joined us today. And until next time, good luck on your healing journey.